Okay, hello everyone. I'm delighted today to have Luca Albertini, CEO of Leadenhall Capital Partners, London headquartered but global ILS investment manager, with me today. Thank you for joining us, Luca.
Thank you for your invitation, sir.
Sure, it's good to see you. I hope all's well with you. I mean, with everyone I'm talking to in these interviews, we start off talking obviously about the pandemic and about how that has affected your business and whether you're business as usual, but from home, or seeing any challenges?
Well, we actually were quite prepared for what we call business continuity plan. We had exercises, and before we locked down London, we have been doing some tests to make sure that everybody was working remotely. And that is not just us, but also our partners at MS Amlink, so that we tested the system so we had no IT issues. The issues usually is to get used to a new way of working to be able to be efficient. You know, the 5 minute chats you had in the office before now become half an hour, an hour invitation in your diary, right? So the beginning was quite daunting, but now actually it's working quite efficiently. I think one of the there are a couple of areas in our business where physical contact is required. I would say the most important one is when you do transactions with new counterparties, particularly on the life side. We need to do operational due diligence. That is becoming difficult, if not impossible. So that is probably, you know, an inevitable consequence of the lockdown. And then, of course, new investors who would like to do due diligence on us will not be able to. So these are the two areas where we see the biggest implications. But currently, everything is almost business as usual.
Good, good. And you're seeing market partners, both on the cedent broker and I guess investor side are just as responsive, and you're getting everything you need in a timely manner still.
Yeah, we do. I mean, like, you know, brokers are now extremely responsive. I think they're slightly worried about the capacity and the ability to actually close on their insurance programs, particularly around the big market dislocation in March. There were some early movers. So yeah, I mean, brokers at the end of the day, when you deal with a fund like ours, we've been going for 11 years. So a lot of those relationships are established, and all our suppliers actually responded quite well. There is a little bit of loss of efficiency, but you know, talking about, you know, something maybe coming a couple of days late than what you expected at the very beginning, but now getting to normal.
Good, good. So it's been very interesting as an observer to watch the way the market reacted, particularly sort of early on when the financial markets broadly were extremely volatile and we saw a huge amount of selling off of catastrophe bonds. Now, for somebody like yourselves, who obviously you have your own cat bond portfolios and you have a UCITS fund as well, are you finding cat bonds relatively more attractive at the moment?
Yeah, it you know, we were around, actually we just started in 2008, just after the financial crisis, and we saw something similar where effectively cat bonds were sold because they were the good asset in a distressed market. So we picked up at the time, and also now we could pick up assets that were trading clearly not in line with a different risk profile, but in line with different liquidity and market dislocations. The sell-off has been substantial. People reported hundreds of million just in March, and if you look at the loss on the Swiss Re cat bond index, is relatively mild given the amount of sell-offs compared to the total amount of the industry. So now some of this dislocation has been already reabsorbed, which of course is good news because again it confirms the health of our industry and the fact that our collateral is safe is mostly in treasury government bonds, but not all of it has been absorbed. So clearly there is quite a hefty rate increase embedded in a cat bond portfolio at the moment.
Of course, yes. And it's, I guess, interesting the way investors rely on this asset class sometimes, as in 2008, they have again in 2020. And but it's, I guess, in the current environment with reinsurance and retrocession rates expected to sort of harden fairly significantly, I suppose, now, do you think cat bonds could become relatively more attractive to sponsors as well, potentially? Do you think they could drive more issuance?
It is quite interesting. There was an issuance that was launched during the worst time of the crisis and has been pulled, but then that company came back to market and closed the transaction. And then the subsequent, out of the three transactions in the market now, two are retrocession. Clearly, you may pay 20% more on your carbon issuance, but still relative to indemnity, retrocession is extremely attractive. Now, it's not indemnity, so there is a bit of basis risk, but for larger insurers, this is embedded. So yes, clearly, the current market environment is making carbon more attractive. There is also a question mark on collateral release. If at the end of this year we have still COVID-19 uncertainties, or if the active hurricane season generates some losses. Although again, I look at some of the past active hurricane season did not turn into losses necessarily. You know, it's not a given, but I think is a prudent buy for a retrocession manager to rely a bit more on carbon at the moment.
Mm, yeah, and I think quite a few of the retro buyers are probably going to be looking for more capacity if they can get it at the moment. So if the cat bond market is a reasonable price, we could see quite a lot of issuance potentially.
Look, capital markets has always been a very reasonable price.
Of course, of course. So moving over to the sort of the collateralized reinsurance and private side, obviously, there's a lot of discussion in the press, ourselves included, about business interruption and how that could become an issue potentially. It's very uncertain at this stage, but what's your sort of gut feel on that? How big an issue do you think that could become?
I think the uncertainty is the bigger issue. I was reading this morning the UK regulator actually asking for quick resolution of any uncertainty through the courts. Is a very good aspiration. I hope it's not too optimistic. You know, the courts have their own processes, and this is not a simple matter. But the uncertainty is really what can create issues in terms of collateral trapping, in terms of people trying to put an adequate reserving. And so we are trying to what we do in our case is to dig down into the detail of each one of our cedents and see what they do and what they represent back to us. Clearly, there is political pressure to pay if in doubt. There is also a very strong movement to coalesce with class actions against insurers and trying to create fresh interpretations to clauses that, quite frankly, in our view, were never meant to actually cover a pandemic. And that is quite a strong point for us. You know, we have half of our asset under management in life, and pandemic has been something that we've been, pandemic cover, something we've been promoting. We were having strong appetite, and in a lot of cases we were told, Yeah, this is interesting, but you know, for the price of it, you know, it's such an extreme event, we wouldn't want to buy the cover, right? Mm-hmm. You know, some of those guys now they say they have the cover.
Yes, it's an interesting one that pandemic has always been sort of an underserved peril, I suppose, because it is or was seen as so far down the tail, and perhaps this will raise the opportunity to provide more of that protection in future.
Exactly. And for us, We're already working with some brokers on how some covers could be structured because it is fun down the tail. Quite frankly, the last event with Danny comparable size was in 1918, which is what is called the Spanish flu, although it affected way more than Spain. Now we are 2020. We have a similar case affecting different type of population. Spanish flu was affecting more the working age population, whilst the current flu is actually affecting more the elderly, and that has an implication for life insurance. However, something can be structured which affirmatively protects against pandemic the commercial insurers. And at the end of the day, if we find that the demand is actually too big, then yes, there is a role for the public-private partnership where you could have some backstop from the various governments, and then, like we've seen for flood or for terrorism, you can have the carbon market or the ILS market providing some capacity to the governments as a backstop to their own capacity. But again, up to now, if I were to look at the amount of pure affirmative pandemic capacity, there is plenty in the market, and I think it would be a pity if this wasn't be used.
Of course, yeah. Just moving back to the sort of the BI and the property side again, briefly. What's your feeling on sort of the potential for litigation risk to emerge, and there to be a risk of lost development as well, an adverse development on contracts? Could this mean that certain exposed collateral has to be trapped, or more collateral needs to be trapped than the actual potential losses seen as at this time? Now, I know buffer tables tend to increase the collateral trapped, but this could be a pretty unique case potentially.
Well, again, if you collateral trap, you what you do is you drain capacity out of the market and clearly rely on fresh capital coming in. So, I think, and by the way, the collateral trap is still institutional investor money. In our case, mostly pensioner money. So, it's okay to be prudent, but collateral trapping more than what the contractual obligation is will be unwise. On the other hand, the collateral trapping rules allow the protection buyers to set their own reserves. So, what I think you wouldn't be right is for the protection buyer not to set the reserve and at the same time to collateral trap. That would be clearly not something that wouldn't work contractually. And also, I think a lot of the in our case, a lot of the exposure in BI comes in sorry in renewal at January 1st. A lot of retro renews at January 1st, and by then I think some of the uncertainties will be passed by, and we would have had some early judicial interpretations. We would have a quantification of the class actions and the amount that the class actions are demanding. Clearly, against that, you have the fact that the pandemic is ongoing. There is a potential for a second spike, and the second spike could come in the winter months. So, by no means we say we are relaxed, but I will see in the June and July renewals, it's mostly residential books, and residential books don't have that issue as a prominent issue. So we are not yet seeing collateral trapping at the June, July renewals as a major issue.
Sure. Okay. So, with the renewals, obviously there's a pretty strong expectation for firming, and there was even before the pandemic emerged. Now people are beginning to talk about proper hardening rather than just firming, which is a step up in sort of the terminology being used. How does the Leadenhall team view sort of reinsurance pricing prospects at this time?
No, we are actually seeing the increase now. Where the the border between hardening and firming is, you know, is I think it depends on a layer by layer and client by client. But you know, we are seeing the double digit rate increases where we wanted them to be, and we are the most important part is terms, right? As we were looking already at firming some hour clause and some terms, I think here there is a massive opportunity to clarify what is covered and what is uncovered. So I would expect going forward a silent pandemic not to be a major issue. So I think people will want to actually have a frank discussion with the client and say, so is it covered? Is it not covered? If it's covered, here is my renewal price. You know, because the one important part here is if this litigation on BI has its way, there will be a massive, massive implication on the pricing of primary insurance.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that will become apparent and affordability will be there. There will be an implication on exposure. So that's why I think you would have, in general, more potential for a settlement on the gray areas. And I don't think we're going to have a leakage on the clear non in the clear cases where the pandemic is not covered.
Sure. Okay. And what about demand? Do you think demand is going to be relatively stable at this mid-year, or do you think potentially down a little bit with people needing to buy less, or do you think people might be motivated to buy more protection? And I guess I'm interested on reinsurance and retrocession there as well.
Yeah, again, we at least in our books, retrocession in June, July tends to be a smaller part of our retrocession book, which is predominantly January. So we are not seeing major increase in capacity there, and therefore the demand. And I think, you know, I'm aware of a number of players that if there was more capacity, they would be happy to buy back up plans, but I'm not, I wouldn't be confident that a lot of extra capacity will be there. So I think it would be mainly a rollover of programs that you have. On the primary side, again, is more Florida Gulf. We expect that the demand will be relatively stable. I haven't seen, bigger program being bought. But again, I am also looking at areas where there is a limited impact for COVID-19.
Right. Okay. And then, sort of looking forward from this, what are the sort of the opportunities that potentially come out of market dislocation for yourselves at Leadenhall, and both on the P&C and on the life side?
Well, it's a great thing to have one of our core perils, which is pandemic and life and health, which is half of our AUM, so hotly debated and potentially carved out from programs and appropriately priced directly as a pandemic or a health or a life, rather than as an incidental thing that never happens. So it's an opportunity to clean the non-life and to provide the properly priced products on the life side. Clearly, the fact that we have demonstrated lack of correlation or low correlation up to now, and I say up to now because, of course, if you have a major BI loss, then maybe there would be some correlation into what is actually not a market event. It is an insurance event. You know, we're talking about mortality and pandemic.
Yeah.
But if, as I hope, sanity prevails, and then the claims paid are what is actually written on the contract, there will be a great opportunity to prove again, as we did in 2018, the value diversification of ILS in general. So with more with higher price, more limit both on some of the perils we do, having demonstrated a lack of correlation, I think we will be very well placed at the end of the year. Should the world be able to manage this pandemic and put it behind us by then?
Sure. And then on the investor side, I mean, it's beginning to look like now would be a very good time to allocate potentially for some of them. but perhaps opportunities may not be immediately available for new investors to the space. But do you?
No, I think what we're telling investors, if you come in now, you actually can pick up a significant amount of business in a time where students are actually asking for capacity. So it's a great time to lock in a relationship and secure a good an increased price. It is a bit ironic, some of the investors who were looking for a market like these are now, of course, distracted by the other market events. And so there is just an issue with the technical time needed to make new investments unless you're already allocated. So, I don't expect, if investors are ready to take advantage of June the 1st and July the 1st, that would be great for them. But more realistically, we expect them to look at what's going on, analyze COVID-19 BI, and then potentially look for allocation at the end of the year.
Sure. Okay, great. Look, thank you very much for your time today, Luca. I really appreciate it. It's nice to
Thank
see
you.
you. Let's catch up again soon. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Have a good day.
You too.